Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.9 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1141, I will air the latest Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in Gaza and Lebanon. I will air eyewitness testimonies from several Canadian healthcare workers, including doctors, nurses, and medical professionals, who volunteered on medical missions to Gaza over the past year, sharing their experience and demanding action against Israel's genocide in Gaza. And I will also air some remarks from Bissan Ouda, a Palestinian journalist, activist, and filmmaker in Gaza, about the catastrophic situation there. And I'll end with the remarks of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib on the constant dehumanization of Palestinians and the recent surge in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic hate crimes in the United States. Let's begin with the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in Gaza and Lebanon from over the past few days, summarized by Noura Burrows-Friedman.
This is the Electronic Intifada newscast. I'm Noura Burrows-Friedman, associate editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 418 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and Lebanon. Early this morning, a ceasefire came into effect between the Lebanese resistance and Israeli forces, following a deal that U.S. President Joe Biden said is intended to bring about a permanent cessation of hostilities. The ceasefire provides enormous relief for the people of Lebanon, who have endured death, injury, loss, suffering, and displacement on a massive scale from Israel's indiscriminate bombing targeting villages and civilian neighborhoods. It came after the resistance led by Hezbollah effectively stopped Israel's ground invasion into Lebanon over the last 2 months and inflicted heavy losses on Israel's military over the last 14 months. The deal also raises many questions about the course of the confrontation between Israel and the resistance across the region, sparking concerns that Gaza faces a more difficult struggle without the support front in the north. The past few days brought heavy rains amid further forced displacement across Gaza as Israel's campaigns of systematic slaughter, destruction, and starvation in North Gaza is now in its eighth week. And airstrikes and massacres continue across all areas of the Gaza Strip. Journalist Hossam Shabat, one of the only remaining reporters in North Gaza who was injured last week in an airstrike, returned to work. He stated on Sunday, quote, "Amidst the rain and the bullets, the suffering of the displaced is evident in their dilapidated tents in Gaza City, where pain is drowned in the details of daily life. Here in Yarmouk camp and the temporary shelters, the cold mixes with tragedy, making the tents vulnerable to flooding or bombing, which doubles the pain of the residents who have been robbed by the occupation of all the elements of a decent life. As I toured this place, the scene was indescribably painful. Barefoot children without shoes, bodies shivering from the cold with no clothes to protect them, and tents on the verge of collapsing on the first days of the depression. This is the life of the displaced, a suffering that never stops, caused by an occupation that continues to destroy everything, leaving behind an extended pain that words cannot describe." At least 120 people were killed in Israeli attacks in multiple areas across Gaza between Friday and Saturday, according to Palestinian health officials. Israeli forces continued their attacks on the Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia, hitting the entrance of the emergency unit as well as in the hospital courtyard, wounding medical staff. On Friday night, the hospital's director, Hossam Abu Safia, said an armed Israeli drone attacked the entrance again, wounding three staffers. A baby in the neonatal intensive care unit died from a lack of oxygen after Israeli forces bombed and destroyed the oxygen station at the hospital, according to Dr. Abu Safia. The drone strikes came just days after dozens of Palestinians were killed and more than 100 injured when Israel attacked the hospital, targeting displaced families who sought safety after the Israeli destruction of a residential neighborhood in northern Gaza, according to Hossam Shabbat on November 20th. According to Al Jazeera, Abu Safia said that ongoing Israeli bombardment appeared aimed at forcing hospital staff to evacuate, something they've refused to do since the Israeli incursion began 6 weeks ago. On Saturday, November 23rd, Hossam Abu Safia was severely injured in an Israeli attack. The Gaza government media office stated that after weeks of relentless attacks on the hospital, Israeli forces directly targeted Abu Safia, quote, when he left the operating room and headed to his office, which led to his direct injury in a horrific crime that shames humanity and was a cowardly assassination attempt. Speaking to the media from his hospital bed, Abu Safia said, quote, we will continue to provide care no matter the cost. Until now, we are pleading to the world and will carry on with the hope that there is collective consciousness. I was hit while I was doing my job, and that's an honor for me to get injured while being in this place. There's nothing more precious than the blood of the medical staff, doctors, and nurses. But this will not stop us. We will continue to provide a humanitarian service at a place known to the whole world. We will provide it, God willing, no matter what it takes, even if it costs us our lives. We remain steadfast. We will provide this service in front of this whole world who let us down. This evil and oppressing world taking our rights away. On Sunday, Dr. Abu Safia stated that his condition has worsened and said that he is in need of an urgent consultation with a vascular surgeon due to the intensity of bleeding at the site of the injury. He said that there are at least 6 pieces of shrapnel that penetrated his thigh, causing possible tears in the blood vessels and veins. Because of Israel's ongoing denial of entry to medical specialists, providers, or even paramedics into North Gaza, Dr. Abu Safia warned that his life and the lives of his patients remain at serious risk. Speaking to the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza, Dr. Abu Safia said on Sunday, quote, it is evident that a new weapon has been introduced by the Israeli army, specifically a quadcopter that drops bombs containing tiny fragments that are nearly invisible to the naked eye. These projectiles penetrate the bodies of our workers, causing severe bleeding and damage to internal organs. Medical staff held a protest with Abu Safia in his hospital room to protest Israel's nonstop attacks on the hospital and everyone inside and around it. In Gaza City on Sunday night, Israel issued new forced displacement orders to the thousands of families sheltering in the area. A local physician, Dr. Izzedine, stated that, quote, in the dead of night, under a relentless downpour, families packed what little they could carry and began their journey on foot. The rain mixed with tears as parents shielded their children from the cold, their eyes filled with unanswered questions. The United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees documented the scene at a school that has been turned into a shelter in Gaza City on Sunday, with families lining up in the pouring rain for medical care at a UN field clinic. In central Gaza, the United Nations reported that at least 40 families lost their shelters and belongings after a school in Nuseirat refugee camp was bombed on Friday. 7 people were killed and more than 20 injured in the attack. The Israeli army bombed the Al-Farouk Mosque in Nuseirat on Saturday. More than 800 mosques have been destroyed by the Israeli army in Gaza since October 2023. Israeli forces also bombed homes in the nearby Burej refugee camp on Saturday night, killing 2 girls. Al Jazeera reporter Hani Mahmoud stated that the girls were killed inside a home and were, quote, part of a displaced family in the central area after their home was already bombed in northern Gaza and they were pulled from under the rubble. Their father, who survived these attacks, is in hospital getting treated, but is in a difficult condition. Mahmoud added that, quote, another attack on a tent in Maghazi refugee camp affected a family that has already endured the trauma of losing their house that was destroyed in an air attack, leaving them all homeless. The tent was attacked by at least one drone missile. And in southern Gaza, three Palestinian children and four adults were killed in an Israeli bombing in Khan Yunis on Saturday. At least three journalists were killed in Gaza this week. The Gaza government media office stated on Saturday that Wael Ibrahim Abu Kafa was killed. He was a lecturer in the journalism and media department at the Islamic University of Gaza and was a reporter with the Holy Quran Radio, the university's radio station. Two other journalists, Mahmoud Al-Khatib and Abdul Rahim Al-Tahrawi, were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City on November 20th. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of this one by Malik Hijazi on the repeated invasions and attacks on Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Malik writes, quote, when the Israeli army once again returned to commit atrocities in Gaza's Jabalia refugee camp, I was overwhelmed with anxiety. What do they want from this devastated place? This is now the third invasion. What more is there to destroy? Why Jabalia camp? Is it because of its dense population, its status as the largest refugee camp in size in the Gaza Strip, or the poverty of its people? And which place will be targeted next? Life in Jabalia was already unbearable, with families crammed into small, dilapidated homes, struggling to meet basic needs under the weight of occupation. But now it has become impossible. Bombs fall relentlessly, children are killed in their sleep, and those who survive find themselves with nowhere to go. The very notion of refuge has been stripped away from the people of this refugee camp, who live in constant terror, waiting for the next explosion to shatter their already broken world. What is happening now weighs especially heavily on the hearts of Jabalia's residents, as this is not their first experience with such devastation. Generations have endured evacuation, loss, and destruction, each event etching deep scars into the collective memory of the community. The trauma is palpable. Families not only remember the past, but also brace for an uncertain future. What angers and frustrates me about what is happening in Jabalia isn't just the scale and brutality of the crime. It's the fact that Israel returned. Again and again, Israel comes back to inflict the same horrors. The world often portrays this genocide as a conflict with a clear trajectory leading to some endpoint, suggesting a red line that would never be crossed. Yet Israel's war on Gaza is cyclical, repeating patterns of violence without any sign of resolution and with widespread silence from numerous governments. What does it mean to normalize genocide? It means accepting it as an ordinary part of life, requiring no justification or explanation. Is this the future we are facing? Endless violence, displacement as on a human chessboard, and unrelenting famine. In this place of unimaginable suffering, I can't help but wonder, what does Israel want from us? They have taken our land, our homes, our families, and our lives. What more is left to take? That's from Palestinian Intergenerational Trauma and Israeli Bombs Strike Jabalia by Malik Hijazi on electronicintifada.net. Turning northwards toward Lebanon, Israel has continued to attack parts of Beirut, bombing entire residential buildings to the ground. On Friday, Israeli airstrikes destroyed an apartment building in southern Beirut. Al Jazeera compiled this video from multiple angles. Similar strikes on other parts of the city continued throughout the weekend. Yeah. Lebanon's health ministry said that at least 29 people were killed and nearly 70 injured when Israel bombed a building at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning in Beirut's Basta al-Faqwa neighborhood. The state's national news agency reported that the pre-dawn attack was carried out without any warning from the Israeli military. The national news agency said that Israeli warplanes, quote, completely destroyed an eight-story residential building with five missiles. The Associated Press noted that the Beirut attacks came after a day of heavy bombardment of the city's southern suburbs and the southern coastal city of Tyre, or Sur. Lebanese political analyst Amal Saad, who has been a guest on this program, posted video of the aftermath of the bombing. Saad said, quote, "This video shows my grandmother's house this morning, where my cousin Ali was sleeping. Miraculously, he survived after being pulled from under the rubble. The house was next to the site of Israel's massive 4 a.m. strike in Basta, which reportedly used six bunker buster bombs, supposedly to kill a senior Hezbollah commander. Hezbollah denies any officials were killed, but the rising toll is devastating so far. At least 15 civilians dead and 63 injured. This strike cannot be justified under international humanitarian law, breaching the principles of proportionality and military necessity. Even if the targeted official were present, Hezbollah has consistently demonstrated its capacity to swiftly replace leaders and sustain operations. This is evident to its continued ability to block Israel's advances into South Lebanon while launching daily missile and drone attacks on Israel. Strikes like this, which result in mass casualties, cannot be justified as they fail to provide any tangible military advantage for Israel." Later in the day on Saturday, Israel bombed a hospital in Baalbek, killing medical staff, including the hospital's director. Reporter Simona Fulton describes the scene and relentless attacks on medical points.
We're in Baalbek in the Beqaa Valley at the location where an Israeli strike killed the director of the Dar al-Amal Hospital, Ali Alam, alongside six others yesterday at 6 p.m. They were sitting over here enjoying the evening when the missile struck. You can see some bereaved relatives over there trying to cope with the loss, which is felt among the people of Baalbek. And this comes just days after another Israeli strike targeted the civil defense, killing more than a dozen people. There's a feeling here that these strikes are not accidents, that they're very much intentional, aimed at institutions and people like Ali Alam, who are critical for sustaining civilian life, with the objective of depopulating this region.
Of course, the resistance in Lebanon has been hitting back hard at Israeli targets, including a series of strikes on Tel Aviv. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing defiance and resilience in the face of Israel's widening campaign of destruction. This week, a video taken by a mother in North Gaza shows her children's surprise when she offers them the first fruit they've been able to find and eat in a year. The joy on their faces is immeasurable.
يعني أول مرة من سنة تقريبا بس
نعم لا إيش موز
يا موز هذا
موز وكلمة تينا
إيش هذا موز وكلمة
تينا تبعوض حضني وانت
ندفع أكل
استني
فواكه
مزقاسة
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Bisan Auda, a Palestinian journalist, activist, and filmmaker in Gaza, who is well known worldwide for documenting and sharing with the world the ongoing genocide in Gaza, posted the following recording a few days ago about the catastrophic situation inside Gaza.
Hey everyone, surviving the day 410 of the genocide. It's been a while since the last time I posted, but I was like devastated, feeling an endless helplessness and hopelessness. Especially after reading about the last moments of Dr. Adnan al-Bursh, our beloved doctor who refused to leave the north of Gaza, moved between three hospitals to help innocents and civilians who were severely injured and massacred by the Israeli army with the least capabilities, assistance, and tools before the Israeli army kidnap him, torture him, and rape him to death. And the reality that this is still happening to the staffs working in the north of Gaza Strip is so disgusting. It's beyond pure evil. You know, it's something new. We can invent new vocabulary to describe what are they doing and how they are not only killing people, but prevent anyone from helping, from giving a little shine of hope to the people who are in the north of Gaza Strip. Yesterday, Ali, he's a civil defense working on the north of Gaza Strip, was killed while he was rescuing with the colleagues' family who were stuck under the rubble after an Israeli bombing that destroyed their homes. The last thing that Ali did was rescuing a mother and four children. They are alive because he sacrificed his life for this. And when I'm watching the screams of his colleagues, I'm like, oh my God, what have we done to this world to face all of this? They're screaming. They have been working together for a whole year to help the people who were abandoned by the entire world. And now they lost one of them. Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't imagine being in a situation like this. Just imagine that your people relies on you and some other brave men to rescue them when the ceiling fall on their heads, and then you kept doing this time after time, hungry, starved, tired, injured for a whole year, and then you lost your colleague. I watched a video for Dr. Adnan al-Bursh yesterday. He was digging graves at the yard of a Shifa hospital when they were stuck there and they were forced to dig the graves for the killed civilians and innocents and children by their hands because the hospital was besieged. So they buried the dead bodies on the yard of the hospital. We didn't deserve all of these good people. Never. We don't deserve them. And the world actually doesn't deserve the Palestinian people at all. The world deserves the endless evil, the Israeli occupation. 2 weeks ago, 9 civil defense brave men were working on the north of Gaza Strip and they were detained. The Israeli army took them. Everyone working in the north is targeted. Haram. Haram. They are alone. Haram. The east and the west. The Arabs and non-Arabs. Everyone just left them. They're working with their hands. With the minimum. They are killed. They're facing death despite all of this. Oh my God. Oh my God. Every time I say that I will not be surprised more by the evil of this world, I just got surprised more. That's it. That's it for today. Anyone is trying to help people, to make change, to give a hand, will lose his or her hand. What are you waiting for the sake of God, for the sake of everything? What are you waiting? What is in here? What are you waiting? What? May Ali, Dr. Adnan Al-Burj, and all the brave people working to rescue, to save the Palestinian existence everywhere in the south and in the north, may their souls just rest in power. We don't deserve them. Wallah. Khalas. I'm tired of this. I'm sick of watching all of these videos, reposting them and making videos telling you what to do every single time, the same thing, but with more and more pain, yani. Khalas, yani. What is the purpose of all of this? What is the purpose of all of this? Enjoy the world.
That was Bisan Ouda, Palestinian journalist, activist, and filmmaker in Gaza. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Eyewitness Gaza, a group of Canadian healthcare workers, including doctors, nurses, and medical professionals, who volunteered on medical missions to Gaza over the past year, held a news conference on November 26, 2024, to share their eyewitness account and experience in Gaza and call for an end to the ongoing genocide there. I'm going to air the remarks delivered at that press conference, and they include Dr. Ping Ji, Dr. Yara Abu Hamdi, Dr. Dorothea Gochardo, Dr. Sheikh Nour Al-Amin, Dr. Muhammad Rizwan Minhas, and Dr. Ben Thomas. Let's listen in.
My name is Dr. Yipeng Ji. I'm a family physician in Ottawa. I acknowledge we are gathering on the unceded, unsurrendered traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg. The impacts of settler colonialism from Turtle Island to Palestine must be acknowledged as the root causes of poor health and social outcomes for Indigenous peoples here on the land in which we occupy, and in Palestine, recognizing the ongoing Nakba, or the catastrophe that began in 1948 as a structure and process of genocide. We will be speaking about how Israeli genocidal colonial violence continues to cause unimaginable catastrophic conditions in Gaza, and how Canada must end its complicity in this ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. As Canadian healthcare workers who returned from Gaza after bearing witness to genocide, we formed a grassroots group, Eyewitness Gaza, to share eyewitness testimony in hopes this would help end the genocide. We wrote to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland, and Minister of Foreign Affairs Melanie Joly, as a group of 19 healthcare workers who have served in Gaza this past year. It has been nearly 4 months since we wrote our letter, which still has not received any reply whatsoever. This is beyond shameful. This is ongoing complicity in genocide by this Canadian government. This is ongoing support and active involvement in genocide by this Canadian government. I will briefly introduce my dearly respected colleagues and friends who you will hear from shortly. Dr. Yara Abu Hamdi is a family physician in Ottawa. She is a member of Health Workers Alliance for Palestine. Dr. Dorothea Gochardo is a scholar activist who has been working on capacity building projects within the healthcare sector in Gaza since 2012 with the GLIA project. She has been running medical delegations under the World Health Organization Emergency Medical Team System since January this year. She was in Gaza in March and from April to June. Dr. Sheikh Nour Al-Amin is a family physician in Mississauga. He was in Gaza in April. Dr. Mohammed Rizwan Minhas is a family physician in Toronto. He was in Gaza in April. Dr. Ben Thompson is a general internal medicine physician and nephrologist. He was in Gaza in March.
Good morning. My name is Yara Abu Hamdi. I'm a family doctor in Ottawa, and I'm speaking today as a member of Health Workers Alliance for Palestine. As I sat down to write these remarks, news had just broken that the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza, Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, had sustained injuries to his leg after repeated targeting of the hospital by Israeli forces. The week prior, new details had emerged about the torture and death in Israeli prison of Dr. Adnan Al-Borsh, a highly respected orthopedic surgeon and head of orthopedic surgery at Al-Shifa Hospital. For over a year, we have witnessed the destruction of hospitals and healthcare facilities in Gaza, which has since extended to Lebanon. We have witnessed the targeting of ambulances and paramedics, nurses and physicians, pharmacists and medical students. As of 2 months ago, Healthcare Workers Watch had verified the killing of 595 Palestinian healthcare workers since October 2023, and the actual number is likely to be close to 1,000. 300 more Palestinian healthcare workers have been unlawfully detained by Israeli forces in the same time period. The world has normalized this. I stand in front of you today to say this is not normal. As healthcare workers of conscience, as humans of conscience, we refuse to accept this as a new normal. Those of us who provide any kind of medical service understand the physical and mental demands inherent to the provision of healthcare. Now imagine providing this healthcare under repeated bombardment. Under a siege, limiting the entry of not only medications and equipment, but also of food, water, and electricity. Imagine providing this healthcare on a limited caloric intake. Imagine providing this care while worrying about the safety of your own loved ones, and in many cases, receiving them as casualties. Our colleagues in Gaza are being made to bear the unbearable, and we owe it to them to continue speaking up. Like the over 5,000 healthcare professionals around the globe who have signed the Not Another Child, Not Another Hospital petition. We owe it to our colleagues in Gaza to listen to their voices and to the testimonies of Canadian healthcare workers who were recently there, and then to act accordingly. We owe it to them to demand that our government take meaningful action to end its complicity in Israel's ongoing genocide. What we accept as normal becomes the world that we live in, becomes the world that our children live in. We must act accordingly.
My name is Dorothea Guchardo, and I stand in solidarity with my healthcare colleagues here and in Gaza. I'm also representing my organization, GLIA, which has been operating in the Gaza Strip since 2012. In response to the Israeli military's systemic destruction of healthcare facilities, we began sending medical delegations to Gaza under the umbrella of the World Health Organization. Until May 7, all medical teams were entering through the Rafah crossing. Each delegate was carrying at least 10 suitcases full of medicine, which was not enough, but it was something. At that point, only 50 trucks were making it into Gaza per day, down from the 500 that were entering prior to October 7. The Rafah pathway provided a straw through which Palestinians could breathe. But after the Israeli military took the crossing, they cut off that pathway and further choked the population. On average this month, only 30 trucks have been entering the Gaza Strip daily. After May 7, our medical delegations must now enter Gaza directly through Israel, putting the Israeli military in complete control over rotations. Immediately, they imposed crippling limitations. Aid workers are restricted to one suitcase each. Only personal supplies, no medicine, no consumables, no equipment that can be left behind for use. Imagine being a surgeon and not having permission to bring your tools. No toys, no treats, nothing that could bring joy to a child patient. And most offensively, no person of Palestinian descent is permitted entry into Gaza, thereby further restricting highly qualified and culturally knowledgeable delegates from volunteering their services. In addition to sending in aid workers, we also established a field clinic. Our clinic sees roughly 600 patients a week, and like all Palestinians, every single one of our patients is displaced. Surrounding our clinic are tens of thousands of families living in tents, a thin piece of nylon that can never protect against the blazing sun, or as we're seeing now, the cold winter rains. There is widespread hepatitis A in these camps. Our patients also come in showing severe malnutrition, suffering from burn injuries, gastrointestinal viruses, and skin diseases due to their dangerous and deteriorating living conditions. One mother brought in her infant with such extreme diaper rash that his entire bottom was raw and bleeding because instead of diapers, which she could not afford at $1 apiece, she was forced to use plastic bags. Another mother, nursing an infant, lost her tent this week due to the rising seas. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be running medical delegations. I don't want to be running a field clinic in Gaza. That clinic should not exist. Israeli attacks on hospitals must stop. Attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure must stop. The Canadian government must comply with all decisions of the ICC, the ICJ, and the United Nations. It must treat the Israeli government as the pariah state that it is. And the Canadian government must begin paying reparations for its active involvement in subjugating the Palestinian population to unjust occupation and genocide.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Rizwan Minhas. I work as an ambassador with Humanity Auxilium. I stand before you today as a doctor, a Canadian, and most importantly, an eyewitness to the genocide unfolding in Gaza. Let me say this clearly. This is a genocide, and if you deny this, you haven't been there. The United Nations Convention defines genocide as acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. This act could include any of the following four. Number one, killing members of a group. This is happening currently. 180,000 Palestinians have been killed, causing seriously bodily harm. Every day, 10 children lose one or more limbs. So this is also happening. Number three, deliberately inflicting conditions where you can't even live. This is also happening. Gaza has no homes, no food, no school, no clean water. And lastly, forcibly transferring children to another group. This is also happening. 17,000 children in Gaza are now orphans, unaccompanied and vulnerable. This white coat that I wear, it's a universal white coat. It stands for empathy, honesty, and integrity. It represents a doctor's duty to protect all lives equally. I feel safe wearing this in Canada. Unfortunately, the same white coat, when a Palestinian doctor wears it, it becomes a target for Israeli soldiers. Since this genocide started, about 1,000 healthcare workers have been killed. Let me just give you an example of one of them. Dr. Adnan Al-Borsh. Please remember this name. My colleague mentioned his name as well. He's an orthopedic surgeon, was abducted from Al-Shifa Hospital. No one knew where his whereabouts were, and when he did appear, he was killed and tortured and raped as well. As doctors, we know our limitations. We may be able to help save a few lives among the injured, but we cannot save the dead. Doctors cannot stop this genocide, but you can. Politicians can, and yet you choose not to. You choose complicity. Leaders like Senator Mark Gold falsely claim that aid is reaching Gaza. This is not just a lie, it's a dangerous lie. It obscures the truth and prolongs the suffering of Palestinians. Who should you believe, a senator who hasn't been there or doctors, eyewitnesses who have been there? Senator Gold, you are wrong. No aid is reaching Gaza, only bombs are. I saw this with my own eyes. I have video evidence. I want to share with you a story of a child I was taking care of in the European Gaza Hospital. Her name is Salma. She was 4 years old. She was brought to the hospital with a severe head injury, unconscious and fragile. Her condition deteriorated, ended up going to the ICU. We had to do a chest tube and intubate her. She reminded me of my own daughter. I kept hoping someone would come and comfort her, like a parent or a mother. But she was, in quotations, a WCNSF, which stands for a wounded child with no surviving family. Each day I stood by her side praying for a miracle, but because of a lack of IV antibiotics, a lack of pain medication, she succumbed to her injuries. Listen, I acknowledge Canada's humanitarian contributions, millions pledged for aid, promises of food and water, But let me tell you this. Our Canadian promises are not reaching the people in Gaza because bombs do not wait for aid. In fact, sometimes it's not even aid. It's a trap for more killing. Canada is helping, but Canada is also complicit. When we condemn violence yet fund it, we are complicit. When we call for peace but turn away from justice, we are complicit. And history will ask us, what did Canada do? Did we lead with courage or did we justify complicity? The time is to choose now. Stop the genocide. Silence does not end suffering. Justice does.
Good morning. I was in Gaza in April 2024 on a medical mission. Sometimes between waves of mass casualties, I would step outside. Me and the other pediatrician that was volunteering there would watch children wandering in the streets. Some were young as 5 years of age. They were barefooted. Their feet were walking in the rubble with wounds that were infected from the raw sewage because the water infrastructure is destroyed. There are about 20,000 new orphans in Gaza. I would witness children walking into the bathroom to fill their water containers with dirty water from the toilets. 70% of the people in Gaza are drinking water that is unfit for human consumption. The Palestinians that we were staying with would take from their very little food and water and give it to us because of their generous hospitality. And even then, some days, we went 30 hours without any water. We felt real thirst for the first time in our lives. I am an eyewitness. All of the children that I saw in the hospital had diarrheal illnesses, many with severe dehydration. I would treat patients in pools of blood on the floor, pools of other people's blood. We didn't have much water, so on one occasion, we had to use, and we felt so horrible about using some of the IV fluids to wash the blood off us because we didn't have anything else. The tools that we had to treat patients were sometimes just rinsed with some salt water instead of properly being sterilized or disposed. I am an eyewitness. Why then do the media and our leaders take at face value the genocidal regime's claims when time after time after time they have shown to be flagrant lies? They say that the murder of thousands of innocent children is because they are human shields. When this is shown to be false and the Israeli occupying forces themselves have been proven to use the Palestinians as human shields. They claim that their illegal occupation and bombardment of Gaza with the equivalent of 2 nuclear bombs worth of bombs is because of beheaded babies and to free the hostages, despite these lies being thoroughly debunked and the families of the hostages themselves blaming the Netanyahu government. They say aid is getting in, deliberately using loose and misleading language. Sure, maybe some aid might be getting in. The United Nations publishes and continuously updates information from the ground where we see that about 6% of the necessary aid is getting into Gaza. Israel's own data reports that only 57 trucks per day entered Gaza in October. On top of that, whatever little tiny bit of aid drips in, it cannot be effectively distributed because of the destroyed infrastructure, bombing of aid delivery trucks, the murder and the bombing of aid workers. And most recently, the United Nations has reported that the Israeli military is allowing some of the aid to be looted by gangs who operate in areas restricted, controlled, and patrolled by the Israeli military under the direct supervision and protection of the Israeli military. This is all part of the deliberate distortion campaign and deliberate dehumanization of Palestinian lives, and which then allows the genocidal occupiers to conveniently blame the Palestinians for the aid not being delivered. Meanwhile, witnesses on the ground like all of us and many healthcare workers from around the world and the UN are reporting, and the UN recently published, stating that the Israelis are using starvation as a weapon of war. Under international law, the occupier must not only allow aid to enter, but must also distribute the aid, which the genocidal regime refuses to do, and instead commits massacres, like when hundreds were scrambling to get flour from the aid truck in February's flour massacre. The current crisis cannot be solved by military might or through political games. The only way to stop the deaths is to halt the violence immediately. As was said at the representative at the United Nations recently, a ceasefire will not solve everything, but without it, nothing can be solved. This is not about sides in a conflict. This is about human rights. This is a genocide, and we should call it that. And this is a genocide that the Canadian government is complicit in. I call on all of our leaders to put an end to this genocide with an immediate and permanent ceasefire. Lift the blockade of the Gaza Strip so humanitarian aid from all border crossings can freely enter and be delivered under the guidance and surveillance of the United Nations. Canada and the world must respect and comply with the ICJ decisions, and the gap between rhetoric and action must be closed.
Good morning. On November 30th of 2023, together with the national leads of three major international charities, including Doctors Without Borders, I met with Prime Minister Trudeau's office. 1 year ago, we described evidence of war crimes being committed by Israel. This included targeting of food and water, blocking humanitarian aid, the disproportionate killing of women and children. 1 year ago, we demanded the government of Canada publicly demand for a ceasefire, that the Canadian government publicly condemn Israel for targeting hospitals and targeting healthcare workers, and that the government of Canada publicly condemn Israel for widespread violations of international humanitarian law, including the crime of genocide. 1 year ago, our demands were ignored. Requests for a follow-up meeting declined. A year later, now, we are live streaming Gazawi's worst nightmare. Where we and Gazawis had faith in international humanitarian law, instead, we found the Canadian government's complicity. Failure to hold Israel to account then has resulted in tens of thousands of dead Palestinian women and children. Israel has killed over 18,000 children. Every university destroyed. Most hospitals destroyed. Israel targeting water, fuel, food, blocking humanitarian aid. All of this was clear in November 2023. 1 year ago, we communicated this to the Prime Minister's office then. I stand before you today, one of 25 Canadian healthcare workers who've been to Gaza during the genocide. We have borne witness to Israel's war crimes, forming a collective group called Eyewitness Gaza that includes hundreds of health workers from the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada, and lawyers of international humanitarian law. We unanimously agree Israel is committing genocide. Now, for the media here that has been shy to use this word, you must stop censoring this word. The French press's use of the word genocide was a critical step in ending the Rwandan genocide. Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. It's time you start saying that. In August of this year, we sent a letter warning the Canadian government of the cost of their inaction, demanding immediate action to lift the Israeli blockade on humanitarian aid, to urge for unrestricted access of medical and surgical supplies to Gaza, to enact a full two-way arms embargo, and to comply with the decisions of the International Court of Justice and ICC. Still today, we have no response, despite this letter being signed by every single Canadian health worker who's been to Gaza during this genocide. As witnesses of that genocide, we are unified. None of us want to be here. We want the politicians of this country to do their job and end this genocide. But instead, Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly chose to listen to the Israel lobby groups. These groups' positions have opposed a ceasefire, denied Israel's war crimes, denied Israel's genocide, disrespected the international court's rulings. This is foreign interference. Why are you willing to undermine decades of international humanitarian law for Israel lobby groups who want to prolong a genocide? We, as Eyewitness Gaza, have all been to Gaza. We know what we saw. We refuse to stop talking about the genocide. So Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly, ignore us at your peril. Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly, you must call openly for Israel to stop blocking humanitarian aid, food, and water. You must publicly respect and comply with the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice decisions. This includes support for a Palestinian state at the United Nations. You must enact a full two-way arms embargo now. Not one penny of Canadian money can go to support a state that is committing genocide. Now, I said before, as many of my colleagues did, I don't want to be here. But like my Eyewitness Gaza colleagues, I take my responsibility very seriously. Anything I can do to stop a genocide, I will. But as a humanitarian and as a physician, I can't do this myself. A genocide should be ended by international leaders like Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly, when they decide to take their responsibility seriously too. Our Palestinian brothers and sisters, they deserve to live in dignity, without occupation and without genocide. Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly, your actions up to this point have supported Israel's genocide. It's time for you to change course. It's time for you to act. Thank you.
What you just heard were eyewitness testimonies from Canadian healthcare workers who volunteered on medical missions to Gaza over the past year. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Over the past 13 plus months, while Israel escalated its atrocities, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and genocide in Gaza, and while many politicians and media outlets upped their propaganda against Palestinians, while still denying the ongoing genocide in Gaza and fully supporting Israel's war crimes, we have witnessed an increase in hate crimes and even deadly attacks on Palestinians and Muslims in the United States. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who represents Michigan's 12th district, spoke on the House floor on November 22, 2024, on the constant dehumanization of Palestinians and the recent surge in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic hate crimes in the United States. Let's take a listen.
Mr. Speaker, I want to recognize the recent surge in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic hate crimes in our country. The constant dehumanization of Palestinians has very, very real and deadly consequences. The hateful rhetoric, including from many elected officials in this chamber and in the media, is leading to violence in our communities and putting our countless lives at risk. Hisham, Kinan, Tassin, our childhood friends, all college students, they were spending Thanksgiving break in Hisham's family in Burlington, Vermont, where they were shot by a man sitting on his porch. They were targeted while wearing keffiyehs and speaking Arabic. Hisham is now paralyzed from the chest down. These hate crimes are not isolated incidents, Mr. Speaker. In October of last year, a man from Farmington Hills, Michigan, posted on social media that he wanted to come to my district in Metro Detroit area and wanted to, quote, who wants to join me to go hunt Palestinians? These threats to commit mass murder horrified our community in Dearborn, many not wanting to open their doors, already grieving the loss of so many loved ones and friends of the horrific genocide taking place. I want to also talk about last month in Detroit, 70-year-old Sada. I wish people would take the time to actually listen to her interview. As a Yemeni-American child of Muslim faith was playing at her park, local park, was brutally attacked while playing. A man approached her out of nowhere and slit her throat with a knife. Sada ran home to her parents covered in blood. As a mother, I cannot fathom the horror of her parents must have felt at that moment, watching their little girl coming running in, bleeding and terrified. Sada survived, but she would live with the trauma for the rest of her life. Nightmares keep Sada awake at night. She says she dreams her attacker is right next to her. In Texas, a mother wearing a hijab was watching her children swim in the community pool when she was approached by a woman interrogating her about what language she was speaking. The woman then jumped into the pool, attempted to drown her 3-year-old Palestinian daughter who was gasping for breath for air as she was pushed under the water in the deep end of the pool. The woman threatened to kill the whole family as the police were carrying her away. Her mother said, "We are American citizens, originally from Palestine, and I don't know where to go to feel safe with my kids. My daughter is traumatized. Whenever I open the door, she runs away and hides, telling me she's afraid that lady will come back and try to attack her again." And here we go with Wadia. Everyone knows about Wadia, I hope. In Chicago, a six-year-old child was brutally attacked in his own home by his landlord, of all people. His mother ran to the bathroom to call the police. His attacker was yelling, "You Muslims must die," while he stabbed little Wadia's body 26 times. They had to pull the knife out of his small body. When his mother came back, she saw his lifeless body there, taken to the hospital, all she heard was just this sense of she will never ever be able to see her child. "We are not animals, we are humans," Wadia's uncle Yusuf said. These stories are horrifying as they are, as horrifying as they are. I'm just thinking of the fact that these are the ones who made the headlines. Behind them are countless others, unreported incidents, with families living in fear and communities being targeted. I was approached by a father who said his child was on her school bus and somebody tried to rip her hijab off. I said, "Did you report it? Who do I report that to?" What terrifies me most, again, is this acts of violence are born from culture of dehumanization. Where is the outrage from my colleagues in this chamber? Why don't my colleagues denounce Islamophobia, anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab hate? We must push back against dangerous rhetoric that fuels this violence and call out those that continue to push for dehumanizing narratives that they just contribute to and spread this kind of violence. Stop using racist tropes that feed into this hate. I know firsthand what it feels like to be targeted with hate. I receive death threats, smears, hate mail, and relentless harassment right outside of my office. To the families of Wadia, Hisham, Kinan, Tassim, Saada, and so many others who we will never know about, I want you to know I see you, I grieve with you, and I stand with you.
That was Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib speaking on the House floor about the constant dehumanization of Palestinians and the recent surge in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic hate crimes in the United States. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.